Okay, if I can call forth Elder Allen for today's message. Elder Allen.
Greetings, one and all. We've all heard the expression, like father, like son. The acorn doesn't fall far from the oak. And you know, that's mostly true. Our children reflect us and how we live and our values and our beliefs, usually. But it's not always the case, and it wasn't always the case with Judah and the kings of Judah. You'd have two or three bad kings, and all of a sudden, a son comes along who ends up to be a good king. And in 2 Chronicles chapter 28, I want to focus on two of them right now, a king named Ahaz and his son, Hezekiah, a study in contrast. And I think we can learn a lot by the actions of men like this in what to do and what not to do as we pursue the faith once delivered. In 2 Chronicles 28, Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign. Now, it seems like they started out real young back then. That's how mature is one at 20, but he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, but he did not that what was right in the sight of Yahweh, like David his father. For he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel and made also molten images for Balaam. He became an idol factory. He not only did worship them, but he made them. And Yahweh is not pleased. Moreover, he burnt incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom and burnt his children in the fire after the abominations of the heathen whom Yahweh had cast out before the children of Israel. Reminiscent, I always, when I read something like this, of the abortion clinics we see today, sacrificing children and the idolatry of self and freedom. And, you know, we dispose of everything these days, and now we're disposing of children. He sacrificed also and burnt incense in the high places and in the hills and under every green tree. These are all characteristics of heathen worship. Wherefore Yahweh his Elohim delivered him into the hand of the king of Assyria. And this is always characteristic, it seems, of Yahweh's punishment. He allows the nations around Israel and Judah to come in and take control as punishment for what they've done because they refused to listen to him. So what did they do? They smote him, carried away a great multitude of them captives, and brought them to Damascus. And he was also delivered into the hand of the king of Israel, who smote him with a great slaughter. For Pekah, the son of Remaliah, slew in Judah 120,000 in one day, which were all valiant men, because they had forsaken Yahweh Elohim of their fathers. We're going to see the reverse of this a little later on. We see Yahweh taking control and what he does. So here we have a real situation. This man turned against Yahweh, who never did really actually worship him, but brought his people into destruction. And in verse 8, the children of Israel carried away captive of their brethren 200,000 women, sons, and daughters, and took also away much spoil from them and brought the spoil to Samaria. So here we have the fallen northern tribes attacking and pursuing and defeating Judah. Many people always seem to confuse the Jews with Israel. They're two different groups of people. But many people think that Israel is the Jews and the Jews is Israel, and that's not the case. All Jews are Israelites, but not all Israelites are Jews. But a prophet of Yahweh was there, whose name was Oded. This is interesting. Normally a prophet goes to Yahweh's people and says, repent. You know, the prophets we know of, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Nathan, going to David and some of these. This man goes to the enemy. And he went out before Yahweh, before the host that came to Samaria, and said unto them, behold, because Yahweh, Elohim of your fathers, was wroth with Judah, you have delivered them into your hand. In other words, this is not an accomplishment of you, But this is the work of Yahweh, who delivered them into your hand, and you have slain them in a rage that reaches up unto heaven. And now you propose to keep under the children of Judah and Jerusalem for bondmen and bondwomen unto you, but there are not with you, even with you, sins against Yahweh your Elohim. So you're just as wrong as they are. Now hear me, therefore, and deliver the captives again, which you have taken captive of your brethren, for the fierce wrath of Yahweh is upon you. So he warns the Syrians, the enemies, that Yahweh is not happy, and Israel as well. Then certain of the heads of the children of Ephraim, Azariah, and all these others, I'm not going to go through that, said unto them, you shall not bring in the captives hither, for whereas we have offended against Yahweh already, you intend to add more to our sins and to our trespass, for our trespass is great, and there is fierce wrath against Israel. So the armed men left the captives and the spoil before the princes and all the congregation. Perhaps this is the background for Yahsh's parable of the Good Samaritan. These men recognized that they had done wrong, and they said, we don't want any more of it. And the men which were expressed by name rose up and took the captives with the spoil, clothed all that were naked among them, and arrayed them, and shod them, and gave them to eat and drink, and anointed them, and carried all the feeble of them upon asses, and brought them to Jericho, the city of palm trees, to their brethren. Then they returned to Samaria. They gave up their captives because they recognized that it was wrong to keep them. At that time, did Ahaz send unto the kings of Assyria to help him? Well, it doesn't faze this man, this Ahaz. He seeks a remedy, not from Yahweh, but from Tilgath-Pileser, king of Assyria. Here is a sad account of a man so opposed to Almighty Yahweh that no matter what happens, he refuses to repent and tries to find his own solutions in the world, his own human reasoning and efforts, rather than humbly calling upon Yahweh in repentance. Well, the rest of the chapter explains how the king turned out to be, this Assyrian king turned out to be a curse rather than a help. Verse 20, Tilgath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came unto him and distressed him, but strengthened him not. For Ahaz took away a portion out of the house of Yahweh, and out of the house of the king, and of the princes, and gave it unto the king of Assyria. But he didn't help him. He took it and said, you know, kind of like someone who holds somebody for ransom, and then you give the ransom and they hurt the person instead. And in the time of his distress did he trespass yet more against Yahweh. This is that king Ahaz. This is that king of which the Bible has not anything good to say. In fact, look at this. It's only one short chapter, 27 verses. And Ahaz, verse 27, slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city, even in Jerusalem. But they brought him not into the sepulchres of the kings of Israel. And Hezekiah, his son, reigned in his stead. Ahaz would not repent. He does everything he can to destroy true worship. Such is a king, one of the few kings about whom we read, there's no redeeming value to his life. He dies, but he doesn't get the honorable burial that a good king would get in the proper cemetery. So now we have his son coming along, a study in complete opposite. Ahaz has a son named Hezekiah who comes to the throne now. He was 25 when he came to rule. He reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Abiah, the daughter of Zechariah. Ab, we know, means father, and Yah is the short form of Yahweh's name, Yahweh Father. He did that what was right in the sight of Yahweh, according to all that David his father had done. This is an amazing thing when you think about it, because normally you don't get good fruit out of a bad tree. But here we have, and this happens a few other times too. you have two or three bad kings, and all along comes a good king. Then you have one or two or three more bad kings. And for some reason, maybe it's the prophets working in the land, you have a king that comes along and reverences Yahweh and wants the people to turn back to him. I like to think of Hezekiah as the man Solomon could have been, because this man has some very good redeeming qualities. Solomon seems to have gone off the deep end and forever fell away. In fact, some call him Hezekiah the second Solomon. Hezekiah is an individual who has a very strong love of Almighty Yahweh. Let's look at then 2 Chronicles chapter 29. Verse 2, he did that was right. Verse 3, he in the first year of his reign, what did he do? In the first month, the very first month, Abib, month of green ears, he opened the doors of the house of Yahweh and repaired them. And he brought in the priests and the Levites. Very first thing he did, he organizes the priesthood after he opens up the temple for worship. And gathered them together into the east street and said unto them, hear me, you Levites, sanctify now yourselves and sanctify the house of Yahweh your fathers and carry forth the filthiness out of the holy place. They had desecrated it, taken all the utensils and all the decorations and whatever and sold them off to the enemies and who knows what all. And he says, we're going to return now to the way it should be. For our fathers have trespassed and done that which was evil in the eyes of Yahweh and our Elohim, and have forsaken him, and turned away their faces from the habitation of Yahweh, and turned their backs. Also they have shut up the doors of the porch, put out the lamps, have not burned incense, nor offered burnt offerings in the holy place unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel. Wherefore the wrath of Yahweh was upon Judah and Jerusalem, and he has delivered them to trouble, to astonishment, to hissing, as you see with your eyes. For lo, our fathers have fallen by the sword, and our sons and our daughters and our wives are in captivity for what you have done. Don't you realize this is all because of your sin? He's telling the people. Now it is in my heart to make a covenant with Yahweh Elohim of Israel that his fierce wrath may turn away from us. He didn't try on his own to fix it. He didn't figure out many different ways in which maybe he could turn the country around, get the people back, raise an army. He turns to Yahweh right off the bat. My sons, be not negligent, for Yahweh has chosen you to stand before him, to serve him, that you should minister unto him and burn incense. A very interesting individual, a very devout man. Let's skip down to 16. And the priest went into the inner part of the house of Yahweh to cleanse it, and brought out all the uncleanness that they found in the temple of Yahweh into the court of the house of Yahweh. And the Levites took it to carry it out abroad into the brook Kidron. Now it began on the first day of the first month to sanctify. And on the eighth day of the month came they to the porch of Yahweh. So they sanctified the house of Yahweh in 8 days. And in the 16th day of the first month they made an end. What do we know comes on the 14th day of the first month? Passover. They've already gone beyond it now, haven't they? Now they're in the 16th day. Then they went into Hezekiah the king and said, we have cleansed all the house of Yahweh and the altar of burnt offering with all the vessels thereof and the showbread table with all the vessels thereof. They put everything back in place where it was commanded in Yahweh's law. Moreover, all the vessels which King Ahaz in his reign did cast away in his transgression have we prepared and sanctified, and behold, they are before the altar of Yahweh. Then Hezekiah the king rose early and gathered the rulers of the city and went up to the house of Yahweh. And they brought 7 bullocks, 7 rams, 7 lambs, 7 goats for a sin offering for the kingdom and for the sanctuary and for Judah. And he commanded the priests, the sons of Aaron, to offer them on the altar of Yahweh. He brought back the worship, basically the worship that Yahweh had commanded his people to do. And so they started sacrificing animals. And they brought forth, verse 23, the goats for the sin offering before the king and the congregation, and they laid their hands upon them. And the priests killed them, and they made reconciliation with their blood upon the altar to make an atonement for all Israel. For the king commanded that the burnt offering and the sin offering should be made for all Israel. This man not only was to rule Judah, but he's trying to and seeking a rectification for the whole house of Israel, even though he's not even there. They're down here in Judah. Israel is up north in Samaria. And he set the Levites in the house of Yahweh with cymbals, with psalteries, and with harps, according to the commandment of David and of Gad the king's seer and Nathan the prophet. For so was the commandment of Yahweh by his prophets. And the Levites stood with the instruments of David and the priests with the trumpets. And Hezekiah commanded to offer the burnt offering upon the altar. And when the burnt offerings began, the song of Yahweh began also with the trumpets, with the instruments ordained by King David, king of Israel. And all the congregation worshipped. The singers sang, the trumpeter sounded, and all this continued until the burnt offering was finished. Wouldn't it have been a terrific sight and sound to see all this happening with all the regalia and all the commanded offerings that Yahweh had commanded, and singers singing and instruments playing? And when they made an end of offering, the king and all that were present with him bowed themselves and worshipped. Moreover, Hezekiah the king and the princes commanded the Levites to sing praise unto Yahweh with the words of David, of Asaph the seer. Many of our songs, of course, are done by Asaph. He was a musician. And they sang praises with gladness, and they bowed their heads and worshipped. Then Hezekiah answered and said, now you have consecrated yourselves unto Yahweh. Come near and bring sacrifices and thank offerings to the house of Yahweh. And they brought in sacrifices, thank offerings, and as many as were of a free heart, burnt offerings. They had to do it willingly. They couldn't do it by force. They had to do it because they wanted to. And then Yahweh would accept it. Well, we find out in verse 34, there weren't enough priests to go around. They couldn't skin all the animals and do all the burnt sacrifices and so forth. So their brethren, the Levites, helped them till the work was ended, until the other priests had sanctified themselves. For the Levites were more upright in heart to sanctify themselves even than the priests. Also the burnt offerings were in abundance with the fat of the peace offerings and drink offerings and every burnt offering. Offering, offering, offering. And Hezekiah rejoiced in all the people that Yahweh had prepared the people for. The thing was done suddenly. They weren't really ready, but he says, we're turning back now to proper worship. So they did, and they did what they could. Now, he's laid the groundwork. Notice in chapter 30 of 2 Chronicles, Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah and wrote letters also to Ephraim and Manasseh that they should come to the house of Yahweh at Jerusalem to keep the Passover unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel. So he's reestablishing the Passover. For the king had taken counsel and his princes and all the congregation in Jerusalem to keep the Passover in the second month. And we know that you are allowed to keep it a month later if, for two reasons, you're unclean by touching a dead body and if you're on a journey. This is interesting. Neither of those circumstances fit here, do they? Did anybody touch a dead body? It doesn't say. Did all these people do that? Were they on a journey? Well, in essence, no, but in practicality, they were. They were away from Yahweh. So they were to keep the Passover on the second month. It says, verse 3, for they could not keep it at that time because the priests had not sanctified themselves sufficiently, neither had the people gathered themselves together to Jerusalem. So in essence, yes, the priests were not clean, and yes, the people were not there at Jerusalem. So Yahweh's law took effect. And the thing pleased the king and all the congregation. So they established a decree to make proclamation through all Israel from Beersheba to Dan. This is a common expression in the Bible, speaking of the whole land, Dan to Beersheba, Beersheba to Dan, that they should come to keep the Passover unto Yahweh of Elohim at Jerusalem, for they had not done it a long time in such sort as it was written. So the post went out with the letters from the king and his princes throughout all Israel and Judah, and according to the commandment of the king, saying, you children of Israel, turn again unto Yahweh Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and he will return to the remnant of you that are escaped out of the hand of the kings of Assyria. He asked for the people to return, and then Yahweh would return to them. He's asking the same people today. Come to me, and I will be your Elohim. But you've got to make the move. You've got to come to me as I call. I'm not going to magically or suddenly come upon you and force you to change. But you have to have the kind of heart that wants to repent and turn to me. He says, don't be like your fathers, like your brethren, which trespassed against Yahweh, who therefore gave them up to desolation, as you see. You want more of this? You like being a slave? You like hooks in your nose? You know, the Assyrians were about as bad as it gets when they took captives. I mean, they would cut off arms, ears, noses. They didn't care. They'd mutilate people. Then they'd put hooks in their noses and drag them away. They were awful people. You like this, Israel, Judah? You like this? You want more of it? Keep going the same way. You get more of it. But if you're tired of it, if you want it to stop, then come to me, Yahweh says. Don't be stiff-necked, verse 8, as your fathers were, but yield yourselves unto Yahweh. And that, brethren, is the gist of all of it. Even today, people are stiff-necked. They're not going to submit to Yahweh and what he commands. They simply won't do it. They won't bend their knees. They won't humble themselves. So they get what they get. Yahweh says, you want it that way? That's the way you'll have it. But if you will soften your heart and turn to me, you'll get blessings. For if you turn again unto Yahweh, your brethren and your children, you shall find compassion before them. I'm in verse 9. That lead them captive, so that they shall come again unto this land. For Yahweh your Elohim is gracious and merciful, and will not turn away his face from you if, conditional, if you return to him. So these couriers go out. They fan out into all of Israel. They invite them to come for Passover, to return to pure worship again. And verse 10, the posts passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim, Manasseh, even unto Zebulun. And they all said, yes, let's go. We're tired of being slaves. We're tired of being under the boot of these awful, oppressive Assyrians. No, they didn't. They laughed them to scorn and mocked them. They didn't want it. Most of them didn't. They had an excuse, I'm sure. We sent out with this newsletter the invitation to join Feast of Tabernacles. Almost immediately, I got a letter from a lady who was explaining to me that she has a father she has to take care of, and she just can't make it. She won't be able to make it. And I guess she excused herself. Not good enough. I'm going to write her back and said, that's no excuse. That's no excuse. Look at Luke chapter 9. Yahshua gave some parables, some no-excuse parables. Luke chapter 9, verse 57. It came to pass that as they went in the way, certain men said unto him, Master, I will follow you whithersoever you go. And Yahshua said unto him, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has not where to lay his head. And he said unto another, follow me. And he said, Master, suffer me first. I got to go bury my father. Sounds like a pretty good reason, doesn't it? Pretty good excuse. My father's lying there, deceased, and I've got to go bury him. What did Yahshua say? Yeah, go ahead. Don't follow me, go bury your father. No, he said, let the dead bury their dead, but go and preach the kingdom of Elohim. There's another one, had another excuse. Master, I will follow you, but, let me first go bid them farewell, which are at my home, at my house. Oh, I've got company. Let me go take care of them first. I got company. And Yasha said, no, man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of Elohim. Matthew 22, verse 1. You know, it's easy to come up with an excuse. And how many times every year we hear the excuses? There will be some faithful, but there will be a lot of excuses. Yasha answered, verse 1, and spake unto them again by parables and said, the kingdom of Elohim is like a certain king which made a marriage for his son and sent forth his servants to call them or bid them to the wedding, and they would not come. Again, he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden, behold, I prepared a dinner. My oxen, my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. They had better things to do. I mean, I've got a job. I've got school. I can't take off in September and for a week and keep a feast. And the remnant took his servants and treated them spitefully and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth. He sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. They'd rather have an excuse. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as you shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together as many as they found, both good and bad. And the wedding was furnished with guests. Go into the highways. Find anybody who's willing to listen to me. 2 Chronicles chapter 30 again. And we find in verse 11, there are a few soft-hearted ones who really wanted to serve Yahweh. Nevertheless, different people of Asher and Manasseh and of Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. Also in Judah, the hand of Elohim was to give them one heart to do to the commandment of the king of the princes by the word of Yahweh. And there assembled at Jerusalem much people to keep the feast of unleavened bread in the second month, a very great congregation. And they arose and took away the altars that were in Jerusalem, and all the altars for incense took they away and cast them into the brook Kidron. And they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the second month. The priests, the Levites, were ashamed and sanctified themselves and brought in the burnt offerings into the house of Yahweh. And they stood in their place after their manner, according to the law of Moses, the man of Elohim. The priests sprinkled the blood which they received at the hand of the Levites. For there were many in the congregation that were not sanctified. Therefore the Levites had the charge of killing of the Passovers for every one that was not clean to sanctify them unto Yahweh. See, mostly, usually, the individuals killed the Passover, as we read in Exodus. But here, the priesthood then took over. For a multitude of the people, even many of Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun, had not cleansed themselves. Yet did they eat the Passover otherwise than it was written. What do you think happened? They didn't do it perfectly. They weren't ready. Hezekiah becomes an intercessor. He prays for them, saying, good Yahweh, pardon everyone that prepares his heart to seek Yahweh, Elohim of his fathers, though he be not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary. And Yahweh hearkened to Hezekiah and healed the people. You think there's not grace and mercy in the Old Testament? Children of Israel that were present at Jerusalem kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with great gladness. And the Levites and the priests praised Yahweh day by day, singing with loud instruments unto Yahweh. So they're all thrilled. Finally, the conscience is quieted because now they're following in the footsteps of the patriarchs, going back to true worship, and they're happy about it. You know, there's something about following the ways of Yahweh that gives you a good feeling in your heart. And we know it, and we can feel it. And you don't have to hide. You don't have to make excuses. You just do it as Yahweh's commanded. Just do it. Is that so hard? Just do it. get some blessings? Or do you like the Assyrians? Do you like them hounding you day and night, telling you what to do? Hezekiah spoke comfortably unto all the Levites that taught the good knowledge of Yahweh, and they did eat throughout the feast 7 days, offering peace offerings and making confessions to Yahweh Elohim of their fathers. And the whole assembly took counsel to keep another 7 days. Seven additional days. They were so happy to do it and to keep it. Kind of like we read Solomon dedicating the temple. They kept it another 7 days. Great joy in Jerusalem, verse 26. For since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there was not the like in Jerusalem. The priests and the Levites arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard. Their prayer came up to his holy dwelling place, even unto heaven. Interesting, we find Solomon also did the same thing, prayed for himself and for the people in 2 Chronicles 6:21. So here we have the second Solomon, doing things a little better, doing things as Solomon should have done, but got so sidetracked, it threw him completely off. Chapter 31, now when all of this was finished, all Israel that were present went out to the cities of Judah and broke the images that they had worshipped, cut down the groves, threw down the high places. This was part of pagan worship, set things up on high, worship under the groves in their rites, and threw down the altars out of all of Judah and Benjamin and Ephraim also and Manasseh until they had utterly destroyed them all. Then all the children of Israel returned, every man to his possession, unto their own cities. And Hezekiah appointed the courses of the priests and Levites after their courses, every man to his service. Solomon did the same thing in chapter 8, verse 14. He appointed also the king's portion and so forth. He established proper worship. He organizes the priesthood. The tithe, we find in verse 5, was established. All of these things. And they brought it in abundantly. Verse 6, and concerning the children of Israel and Judah that dwelt in the cities of Judah, they also brought in tithe of oxen, sheep, tithe of the holy things which are consecrated unto Yahweh Elohim, and laid them by heaps. They had so much, they piled it up. When I was living out in Kansas, you know, and you always see these pictures, the wheat harvest is so abundant. You go to these granaries, and those things are just packed full. I mean, these things are huge. You ever been by one? Made out of concrete, you know, and they go up, seems like forever. And they start dumping the grain outside, and they got it piled up outside these grain silos because they've got so much. And that's what we have here. So much, they just piled it up. The people wanted that much to return to Yahweh and serve him. The third month, they began to lay the foundation of the heaps and finish them in the seventh month. Took that long. And when Hezekiah and the princes came and saw the heaps, they blessed Yahweh and his people Israel. Hezekiah questioned with the priests and the Levites concerning the heaps. And Azariah, the chief priest of the house of Zadok, answered him and said, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of Yahweh, we've had enough to eat and have left plenty. For Yahweh has blessed his people, and that which is left is this great store. You know, you turn to Yahweh. He doesn't promise an easy street, but he does promise the blessings that come with obedience. They had piled it up. The rest of the chapter reveals the establishment of the treasury to handle all the proceeds. At the end, in verse 20 and 22, the most important verses in this chapter, thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah and wrought that which was good and right and true before Yahweh as Elohim. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of Elohim and in the law and in the commandments to seek his Elohim, he did it with all his heart. And what resulted? He prospered. Prosperity from faithfulness. It's a blessing. But you have to remember where that comes from. where the prosperity comes from. Doesn't mean there's not going to be trials. Let's look at the next chapter. Sometimes we get too prosperous and then we start to forget. After these things and the establishment thereof, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and entered into Judah and encamped against the fenced cities and thought to win them for himself. So now we got Saddam coming down and he's going to start taking the cities for himself. And when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib was come and that he was proposed to fight against Jerusalem, he panicked. He took counsel with his princes and his mighty men to stop the waters of the fountains which were without the city, and they did help him. Now, as great as this man was, he was also very human. He panicked. And he goes to his generals and says, what do we do? And they said, well, we need to get rid of the springs outside the city. So when they come and attack us, they won't have any water. So there was gathered much people together who stopped all the fountains and the brook that ran through the midst of the land, saying, why should the kings of Assyria come and find much water? And he strengthened himself and built up all the wall that was broken and raised it up to the towers. This is evidence of a laxity, isn't it? When our own defenses and our own structure, spiritual structure, is in disrepair, it shows a laxity in our own life. That we haven't kept it up. We've kind of drifted along. Things have gone pretty good, and so we start to get lax and we forget. And that's when the enemy comes. The enemy's always out there. And another wall without, and repaired Millo in the city of David, and made darts and shields in abundance. And he set captains of war over the people, and gathered them together to him in the street of the gate of the city, and spake comfortably to them, saying, well, he did prepare his fortifications, but he was confident. He spake comfortably. He knew they would have the ultimate victory. He says, be strong and courageous. Kind of sounds like old Churchill, you know, during World War II. We'll fight them in the streets. We'll fight them in the land. You know, we'll fight them everywhere. And we will prevail. Be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. Ultimately, this man put his faith in Yahweh. He knew, no matter how strong his army was, this king who has conquered city after city, country after country, could probably wipe him out without Yahweh's help. He says, with him is an arm of flesh, but with us is Yahweh our Elohim to encourage us and to fight our battles. And the people were encouraged with the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. A good leader can bring out the confidence in people that they could rely on Yahweh. After this, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, send his servants to Jerusalem? But he himself laid siege to the rest of it until Hezekiah, king of Judah, and all Judah that were at Jerusalem, saying, now, here we have the workings of another enemy. This is the adversary who's taunting. Thus says Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do you trust that you abide in the siege of Jerusalem? I'm about to wipe you people out and you don't seem to get it. Does not Hezekiah persuade you to give over yourselves to die by famine and by thirst, saying, Yahweh our Elohim shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria? So, he's telling them, that, you know, you don't have much of a chance here. Has not that same Hezekiah taken away his high places, his altars, and commanded Judah and Jerusalem, saying, you shall worship before one altar and burn incense unto it? Know you not what I and my fathers have done to all the people of other lands? They had lots of gods they served, which didn't do them a bit of good. We took them all. You've got one. You think he's going to help you? Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers utterly destroyed that could deliver his people out of my hand? that your Elohim should be able to deliver you out of my hand. Now therefore, let not Hezekiah deceive you. He's raising doubts. And you know, that's probably the most effective when people lose their will, their resolve. They just fall like dominoes. So he's trying to instill doubt in them, taunting them, telling them, you can't trust in Yahweh. Therefore, let not Hezekiah deceive you, nor persuade you on this matter, neither you believe him. For no Elohim of any nation, of any kingdom, was able to deliver his people out of my hand and out of the hand of my fathers. How much less Elohim deliver you out of my hand? His servant spake yet more against Yahweh Elohim and against his servant Hezekiah. He wrote also letters to rail on Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, and to speak against him, saying, as the gods of the nations of other lands have not delivered their people out of my hand, so shall not the Elohim of Hezekiah deliver his people out of their hand. Propaganda, like they did, you know, during the different world wars, dropping them from planes, little leaflets saying, you know, you haven't got a chance. Give up. We did the same thing, Gulf War. Desert Storm, drop lots of leaflets. I guess it was effective for many because they certainly were afraid. Here, they tried. They spake against the Elohim of Jerusalem as against the gods of the people of the earth, which were the work of the hands of man. And for this cause, Hezekiah the king recognized the damage it could do. What did he do? He prayed and cried to heaven. This man was saying, Hezekiah is deceiving you. We are overwhelmingly superior. Just look at all the others we've conquered. No mighty one has been able to deliver our enemies from our forces. They ridiculed Yahweh, trying to put him in the same basket as all these man-made idols. And he tries to incite fear and wrong, and worry, I should say. You know, that's the tactics of the adversary, isn't it? There he is, right there. In a man of Yahweh, and here comes Satan the devil. You might as well hear him hissing away as if they were in Eden, telling them, it's not going to happen. You don't have anyone really to trust in. Give up. And so Hezekiah goes to Yahweh in prayer. What does Yahweh do? He sent an angel. You know, sometimes Yahweh does things miraculously. Sometimes he gives us the strength to overcome. Sometimes he steps in. He sends one angel. 185,000 valiant Assyrian soldiers, champions, destroyed in one night. So the old Sennacherib goes out there, takes a look around, sees most of his army wiped out. They're all dead, laying there dead. He returns with shame to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, you know, the one he relied on, that they came, two of his boys killed him right there while he's worshiping. Thus Yahweh saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all others, and guided them on every side. All we have to do, brethren, is have a little faith. How often do we rather put the trust into our own might, our own efforts, and forget Yahweh? I remember a lady who had cancer, and she wouldn't go seek help. She says, if that's what's going to happen, if I'm not going to make it through this, then that's what's going to happen. She was delivered from it. That's real faith. When our very lives are at stake, that's real faith. Thus Yahweh saved Hezekiah. And so they brought gifts unto Yahweh to Jerusalem and presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah, so that he was magnified in the sight of all nations from henceforth. If you... You know, First and Second Chronicles are really mirror images of First and Second Kings. Sometimes we get a little more detail in the kings. So let's turn to Second Kings chapter 20. Hezekiah is about to get sick. See, it didn't always go well with him. You know, he wasn't always on easy street, as some would have you believe. He turned to Yahweh and all things would be rosy. That's not real life. Real life is overcoming, and that's what each of us has to do to build strength of character and spiritual strength that we need and will need. So in 2 Kings chapter 20 and verse 1, in those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. He was that sick. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, thus says Yahweh, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Now here we have a prophet telling his king a prophecy that he was going to die, assuming right, you know, pretty quick. So Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed unto Yahweh, saying, I beseech you, O Yahweh, remember now how I have walked before you in truth with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in your sight. And he wept sore. You know, if one thing Yahweh wants to see is a true, contrite heart. David didn't get things always right, we know that. But his heart was unlike any man, I believe, other than Yahshua, who ever lived with such a desire and love of Yahweh. And that's what Yahweh wants, a true and contrite heart. So, came to pass, before Isaiah was gone, the word of Yahweh came to him, saying, turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Yahweh Elohim of David my father, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears. Behold, I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up into the house of Yahweh. And I will add unto your days 15 years. So you're going to live 15 more years. That's my promise to you, Yahweh says. I will deliver you and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria. I will defend this city for my own sake and for my servant David's sake. And Isaiah said, take a lump of figs, and they took and laid it on the boil, and he recovered. Interesting how that happened. We know in Revelation it talks about the leaves of the trees will be for the healing of the people. So here we have a lump of figs being applied to a boil, and it heals him. Hezekiah said unto Isaiah, what shall be the sign that Yahweh will heal me? A little bit human, wanted to know for sure. Prove it to me. What's going to happen? Well, the prophet says, well, you can either, you know, we're going to forward the time. We're going to forward time 10 degrees. Interesting. Hezekiah says, well, you know, that's the natural rotation of the earth. He didn't say that, but that's basically says that's the way it always goes. I want to see it go back 10 degrees. Okay, fine. So it does. Isaiah cries to Yahweh, and Yahweh brings the shadow in verse 11, 10 degrees backward. At that time, I'm going to go into all the rest of that. But so, we have a man who was healed of Yahweh and even got proof that it was from Yahweh in a miraculous evidence that Yahweh gave him. Oftentimes we get discouraged. If we just turn to Yahweh in total prayer, Yahweh will hear our prayer. He promises he will. Seems whenever Israel was turning away from Yahweh, Yahweh had to correct them. And now this man, Hezekiah, has so many things happen to him, he becomes a little bit on the proud side, as sometimes we humans do, we start to forget. Hezekiah, verse 13, we have to get back. I guess I should have kept it going. We've got the son of the king of Babylon coming in and want to, they heard he was sick, and they hearkened unto him, show him the house. And so he brought them in anyway to visit. So he shows them all of his riches, silver, gold, spices, all of this. Why? A little bit of vanity, almost as if, look what I have done. Then Isaiah the prophet said unto the king, what said these men, and from whence they came unto you? And he says, well, they're from Babylon. He said, well, what have they seen in your house? He said, all the things that are in my house have they seen. This is nothing. there is nothing, I should say, among my treasures that I have not shown them. And Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of Yahweh. Behold, the days come that all that is in your house, and that which your fathers have laid up in store, shall be carried into Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says Yahweh. And your sons shall issue from you. Which you shall beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Yahweh is not too pleased and will become vain, puffed up. Then said Hezekiah, good is the word of Yahweh which you have spoken. He said, is it not good if peace and truth be in my days? What does he mean? He's saying, well, that's in the future, fine. I don't have to worry about it. Things are going well for me, basically is what he said. Even though his sons are going to be taken into captivity and not too many good things happen. So the rest of Hezekiah and all his might, and how he made a pool and a conduit and brought water into the city. And by the way, I was blessed to be there and see that. They took the brook and they brought it 1,700 feet through solid rock. They started at one end and the other end. And they met right square in the middle. You know, GPS or whatever to guide them. No radar, nothing. And they do solid rock, and you can see it. You can see where they, you know, 2,700 years later, how that brook was brought into the city so that they could have water if they were going to be under siege. It's amazing. This man was quite a guy. It says, and brought in the city. They are not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah, and Hezekiah slept with his fathers. And Manasseh, his son, reigned in his stead. And oh boy, here we go again. He was one of the bad kings. Not enough time to go into his life, but it's amazing how even a great king like Hezekiah can have some failings, as I guess the Bible just shows us that we're all human and we all do things that are wrong. But on the whole, this man was one of the greatest kings. We can take the zeal of Hezekiah and use it as our example. We can take his weaknesses and learn from that as well. If only our nation would turn to Yahweh by keeping his feasts, by observing his word, as Judah did under Hezekiah, if only all of Yahweh's people would do so, would get back to the covenant that he made. Whenever they turn their back to Yahweh, Yahweh, in his wrath, judges his people. When they want to get back to him, what do? They start keeping his laws, his feasts, his Sabbath. Hezekiah is a righteous king with human poles like all of us, like Yahweh's people. He reacted in human ways often, but also as a man that we can look to for an example, that even though things are rough, this man had strength in adversity. And we can look at that and say, you know, Yahweh still blesses if our heart is right. We may make a few mistakes, but in the long run, Yahweh will be with us and Yahweh will bless us, just as he did this man who became one of the greatest kings of Judah and of Israel and of the scriptures themselves. May Yahweh bless you.